DW Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
With me, Assumpta Latus. We are also live on Facebook page DW Africa.
Coming up, counter accusations fly after four people are killed as a hospital is torched down in Cameroon's Anglophone West region. We will hear the latest from our correspondents.
The government has blamed the secessionist for burning down the hospital. But on the other side, the secessionists too are saying that it is the government soldiers that have burned down the hospital.
And Nigeria steps up the fight against fake news ahead of the general elections this Saturday.
Everywhere in the world, even in the US, in the most advanced, technologically advanced, politicians would always use any means to gain advantage.
And the political crisis in Venezuela escalates as a self-declared interim president accuses the government of carrying out silent genocide.
We have that and much more coming up, but first let's hear other news happening around the globe.
DW News.
I'm Eunice Wanjiro with DW News. Venezuela's opposition is renewing its push to bring in humanitarian aid from neighboring countries in defiance of the government and military. More than 100 tons of U.S. aid is still waiting in the Colombian border city of Cucuta. Embattled President Nicolas Maduro has ordered the military to block the supplies from entering Venezuela. Opposition leader and self-proclaimed president of Venezuela, Juan Guaido, has repeatedly called on the military to switch sides, and he did so again in an interview with DW News.
We will always appeal to the conscience of the armed forces, ask that they pick the constitutional side. We have been very clear with the armed forces that they have to allow humanitarian aid to enter, and whoever blocks it will be tried for human rights violations.
In Spain, the trial is underway for 12 leaders of the Catalan separatist movement. They are charged for their role in the 2017 independence referendum that the Spanish government in Madrid said was illegal. Some face decades in prison if they are found guilty of rebellion. The trial is expected to last 3 months, with verdicts coming several months later. The head of the independence movement, Carlos Puigdemont, is not in court. He's currently living in exile in Belgium. He said on Tuesday that the high-profile trial in Madrid was a stress test for Spanish democracy. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. In the United States, Republicans and Democrats appear to have reached an agreement over border security which will prevent another U.S. government shutdown. The deal includes plans to finance new barriers along the U.S.-Mexico border, but it's only a fraction of the money President Donald Trump wants to build his wall. Trump charged ahead with his pledge to build a wall at the U.S.-Mexico border, skimming over the details of lawmakers' tentative deals.
We're setting the stage. We're setting the table. We're doing whatever we have to do. The wall's being built. It'll continue. It's going at a rapid pace. The Rio Grande. It's happening. Go check it out.
Nigeria's government has acknowledged there has been a resurgence of violence by Islamic extremists in the country's troubled northeast region in the weeks to the country's upcoming national elections on Saturday. The near-daily attacks leaves many traumatized Nigerians questioning whether they can vote for President Buhari as he seeks a second term. Others question how the elections can be held in the troubled northeast region. And finally, British Prime Minister Theresa May has asked Parliament for more time for talks with the European Union to renegotiate her Brexit deal. May told lawmakers she can still reach a deal on leaving the bloc that lawmakers could support. But so far, her deal has failed to get Parliament's support. Britain is scheduled to leave the EU on March 29th. For more news and information, visit our webpage. That's dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
And welcome back to Africa Link. We are here live, and your hosts for today's show is me, Assumpta Latus.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura. And of course, first, a warm welcome to all of you listening to us live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. To mention just a few names there, Bokba Ronald is saying, greetings to you, DW, and Mark Eden Wagang saying hello at DW Africa. We also want to know what you think about the stories that we are covering today.
Now, we begin the program in Cameroon. Residents of Kumba region, north of Buea, are still in shock and grief following the death of four people after gunmen burned a hospital to the ground. Kumba is one of the regions which has been badly hit by the violence between separatists and Cameroon troops that began in October 2017.
The separatists claim the region has been marginalized and they continue to face discrimination from the French majority. To give us more insight on the incident, I talked to our correspondent Jean-Marie Ngong-Song. First, I wanted to find out what we know about the people who carried out the attack.
So far, the information that we have gathered on the ground is that there were armed, unidentified armed men who stormed the hospital at night, and they burned down the hospital, killing some patients in the course of it, and burning some alive. So far, the government has blamed the secessionists for burning down the hospital, accusing the hospital that they have been treating armed soldiers. But on the other side, the secessionists too are saying that it is the government soldiers that have burned down the hospital, accusing the hospital for actually sympathizing with the fighters as well.
Is it clear why the gunmen or the attackers targeted Kumba town?
The Kumba town is a very restive hotspot for the ongoing separatist fighters and the regular government armies elements that have been on the ground. After Buea and Limbe in the southwest region of Cameroon, Kumba is actually one of the biggest towns. And at the onset of this crisis, Kumba town has actually been very buoyant in business activities. And since the start of this crisis, it has actually been fierce fighting has been going on in Kumba.
Can you tell us how the mood is today in Kumba, especially after these attacks?
The city is actually calm, with shops and stores still locked. Many people are still indoors. Many people that have been monitoring online, they're praying for the Valentine's Day to actually come and pass, because the 10-day lockdown will expire on the 14th. And many people are saying that they can't wait for the 14th to come so that they can go about daily businesses.
Can you tell us how the government has responded or is saying in regard to this latest attack?
The government has been very clear. The Minister of Communication, Minister René Emmanuel Sadi, has actually been signing releases condemning the act, which they attribute to secessionist fighters. And it's just been condemnation and more military crackdowns. We have seen the military intensifying their action too in other areas like Kumbu, like in the northwest region and other places in the southwest region.
We also know the opposition has been blaming the government for these attacks. What are they saying in particular in regard to these attacks?
Yes, from the onset today, most of them are attributing the arson to the military soldiers, saying that they did that just to give them a bad name, to further make the population tear away from the sympathy they have been giving so far to the secessionist fighters.
That is Jean-Marie Ngong-Song reporting right there on the happenings in Kumba region in north of Buea. And of course, many of you are talking about that. KB Valerie is saying those people you say were killed were patients in the hospital. They got burnt by fire that ravaged the hospital.
And Jeremiah Bayer, you're saying burning down a health facility or hospital? Oh my God. Yeah, that was my reaction today as well. This is madness and stupidity and nothing else. This is what you're saying. And how could you do such a silly thing and go free?
So those are your comments. You can also contribute there on DW Africa. To Venezuela now, where the political crisis continues to escalate. Opposition leader and self-declared interim president Juan Guaido has likened what is happening in his country to a silent genocide. Guaido, talking to DW in an exclusive interview, warned President Nicolas Maduro that his time was up.
Time is running out for Nicolas Maduro's regime. It has no future because he has no proposals and does not have public support. He has no direction. He's not protecting his people, and this is against the popular movement that is growing, being mobilized, and gaining international support. They can continue to do the only thing they know how to do, and that's repression, torture, persecution, or simply robbing money from Venezuela. But what is unstoppable is that we are going to have a peaceful democratic transition in Venezuela for the good of the people.
Now, the opposition leader told DW that there will be more nationwide protests starting tomorrow to pressure the government to allow in blocked humanitarian aid.
We have managed to hand out a small portion of the humanitarian aid to save lives. 4,500 nutritional supplements for malnourished expectant mothers. We also handed out 85,000 nutritional supplements for malnourished children to stabilize them. That represents over 1 million portions, but it's not enough. That's why we need to open a humanitarian corridor. We will always appeal to the conscience of the armed forces, ask that they pick the constitutional side. We have been very clear with the armed forces that they have to allow humanitarian aid to enter, and whoever blocks it will be tried for human rights violations. What's happening in Venezuela could be considered a silent genocide when you have hundreds of thousands who've died because of a shortage of food and medicine. This regime is responsible for direct deaths, like in the case of the special forces that killed more than 70 people in a week for protesting, and for indirect deaths because they are not doing anything to solve the food and medicine crisis.
That is Venezuela's opposition leader, Juan Guaido. You can also have more on that on our website, dw.com.
To Nigeria now. Nigerian media is stepping up the fight against fake news ahead of the general elections planned for this Saturday. The country has often been struggling with fake news, including the most persistent the President Muhammadu Buhari had during his lengthy treatment in London in 2017.
An initiative called Crosscheck Nigeria aims to separate fact from fiction, with the polls just around the corner. Our correspondent Adrian Krish met with the people on the front line of the fight against fake news.
Lulade Nwanze and her team in The Guardian's digital newsroom check the top social media topics every morning. On Twitter, an advisor to the Nigerian president alleges that an opposition party is offering food and money in exchange for votes. The news spreads quickly, so the Guardian team decides to investigate.
People searched the image, found out it was a lie. I mean, the photograph dated as far back as 2017. It was a photograph from an outreach done by a charity foundation in Lagos. So it wasn't what she said it was.
Shortly after the Guardian publishes its findings, the politician's tweets are deleted. To check these kind of stories, The Guardian has teamed up with some 20 other media outlets. They've formed a collective called Crosscheck Nigeria to support each other in the research process. A story only goes online when four of the different media organizations have looked at it. Dayo Ayetan is one of the coordinators. Around 50 journalists are involved in the project.
Everywhere in the world, even in the US, in the most advanced technologically advanced, politicians would always use any means to gain advantage. If it is by weaponizing information, they will do that. But you see, the important thing is that they know that once they do it, if they try it, there are mechanisms, use of technology, that can also out them. And so perhaps that would reduce the incidence of, you know, politicians weaponizing information for advantage or to do damage.
Ayetan says the number of fake stories has increased in the run-up to the elections. Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa, and it's divided along ethnic lines, which often leads to conflict.
Adrian Krish there with that report from Nigeria.
Now, we do have some comments from you, our listeners, and one is from Blasius Awangsang from Arkansas in the United States. You're saying, when someone says he is or she is fighting against fake news, what they are actually saying is that they are fighting against news that they don't like. And you're putting in comparison with President Trump, who is saying to CNN, you are fake news, just because he doesn't like fake news. And you're saying that when President Trump says that something is fake news, what he's saying is that it's news he doesn't agree with. But you do understand our point of view.
Yes, Assumpta, that is the point when someone says fake, when politicians use that to their advantage, especially days before the polls or just months before the polls. You can also tell us what you think, where you are, by going to our page, DW Africa.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Africa Link, and we are live here from our studios in Bonn, Germany. Your host for today is me, Assumpta Latus.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura. Remember that we are also live on our Facebook page. I know most of you are there, just as Prosper talking about what we were just talking about in Cameroon and Nigeria fake news. Jamie Martins is telling us we need to do more and investigate more. So thank you very much. Tell us, we also want to get your debate. What do you want us to talk about further on these topics? You can also tell us your thoughts.
Now, still to come, a young Ghanaian boxer is determined to kick it until he becomes a world champion.
I want to be a world champion in my future. I want to be a champion. If not a world champion, I want to become a champion. I want to go find boxing. If they are calling, they should call my name.
I kind of like this guy. You know, I want to be a champion. I want to be a champion. I want to be a champion. You have to say it so many times until you believe that you want to be a champion, right?
I like the positive thinking, yeah.
Yes, but first, let's talk about a subject that many don't want to hear. It is about refugees. Sub-Saharan Africa is home to around 18 million of forcibly displaced people. That number has soared in recent years, partly due to ongoing crises in the Central African Republic, Nigeria, and South Sudan.
Different institutions are working tirelessly to ensure that the displaced have access to services such as education and healthcare. DW's Catherine Omwantho visited the Kakuma refugee camp in northern Kenya, where a project to empower refugees through a settlement scheme has been piloted, and her report now is presented by Sela Oneko.
Jennifer Loro fled South Sudan in 2016 with three of her six children. Now she lives in Kalobeye, which is part of the Kakuma refugee camp in the remote and arid northern region of Kenya. It's also the place that Jennifer now calls home.
When I get money, I will send for the other three children. I don't think I will go back to South Sudan. There's no stability yet.
The idea behind Kalobeye is to help refugees become self-sufficient. That's why Jennifer has been provided with a semi-permanent house, a water tank, and a space for a kitchen garden. Jennifer also rears geese, which she sells and uses as food for herself. Not far from her place, there's construction going on, as the camp prepares to house more people. But the problem is, Kalubeye and Kakuma refugee camp are located in one of Kenya's most marginalized areas, and some of its citizens say they don't see the benefits of the camp being there. At Kalubeye Market, James Lerulo, a motorbike driver, is waiting for a customer. The 20-year-old, a Kenyan from a nearby village, says he moved here to find work. He doesn't think it's fair that refugees are given help when his village is struggling.
Our biggest problem is water. Our animals have it rough. We have to bring them closer to the refugee camp if they are to survive. It's only the refugees that get water, not the host community.
While there are several water points in Kalobeye, the host community only has one functioning borehole. Sometimes the locals are forced to dig wells at a seasonal river in order to find water. The agreement between the Kenyan government and non-governmental organizations working here is a 50-50 policy. That means the local community is supposed to get whatever amenities the refugees get. But putting that into place seems to be a challenge, as James Lerulo says.
I don't think they even follow that rule, even though it is in force.
The hope is that Kalobeye will grow into a town where refugees and the host community can live together. And then maybe James can start seeing the benefits of having refugees like Jennifer there.
Sela Oneko with that report by Catherine Omwando.
And we do have a feedback on that. Bleus Awansang is saying, wow, this is the first time I have heard someone claiming that the office baristas at the AU care for the plight of the refugees.
That's really a good one.
Africa on the move.
Now in Africa on the move this week, we go to a small town known for its tough streets. Bukom, a suburb of Ghana's capital Accra, has produced some of Africa's greatest fighters.
And you're right, five world boxing champions hail from its tangled alleyways, and most of Ghana's national champions are from there. Our correspondent Floris Chukura followed a long one boxer who is determined to become a world champion, and her report is now presented by Ineke Mills.
The morning routine of a champion. Felix Ajom gets ready for his first run of the day. He lives in Bukom, a suburb of Ghana's capital Accra, where most people grind out a living from the fishing trade. But Felix says it's not much of a life. He has bigger dreams, and boxing could be his escape route.
Our fathers are fishermen, so they don't get enough money to take care of us. So if you are coming as a young boy, you have to work hard and you get your own to push yourself hard.
Bukom has produced some of the best fighters in Africa. From a young age, kids here learn to fight for what they want. The town is sometimes referred to as Ghana's unofficial university of boxing. And victory in the ring is a fast track to fame and fortune. People here think that Felix has the right stuff to make it big. Sandra Ganga is among the residents who agrees.
Felix is very good. He does well in the boxing ring. He often knocks out his opponents in round two. He doesn't waste time and energy at all. We support him. We are his fans. And wherever he goes, we follow him to give him the support he needs.
Felix trains regularly at the Bronx Boxing Gym, a favorite destination for boxers who hope to make it big. It's one of dozens of makeshift gyms scattered across the town. Children as young as six come here every day after school to practice. Coach and founder of Bronx Boxing Gym, Lawrence Kaoloko, says Bukom is a breeding ground for champions.
Because there is a competition here, there is a challenge here, there is a lot of gyms here. We have more than 45 gyms in just this region, talking about boxing. So that tells you the challenge and the competition when it comes to boxing.
He says it's this intense competition that propels many boxers from Bukom to succeed. Loco started the gym 15 years ago and funds it himself. He says it's worth it to give the kids here hope for a better future.
Over here, most of the boys are from the street. And if you want to take them out from the street, you need to convince them. Elsewhere, you will go to the gym and register and paying a token every month. But over here, it's not like that. You, the coach, rather will bring them to the gym and you will clothe them, you give them equipment, and you even give them money to get some food or get something to support themselves. So it becomes more tough and difficult for you as a trainer to keep helping other people. But that is what we have choose to do.
Loco hopes one day the boys who make it big will come back to help the gym and the community. But all Felix Ajom, the professional boxer, can think about right now is what he can achieve beyond Bukom.
I want to be a world champion in my future. I want to be a champion. If not a world champion, I want to become a champion. I want to go far in boxing. They call me, if they are calling, they should call my name.
For now, it's a dream he'll chase from the streets he calls home.
That inspiring report was compiled by Florence Chukura.
Yes, and as I said, I am quite really, really happy to hear such an inspiring story of this guy, a boy who wants to be a champion. And he believes in it when he says that I want to be a champion. But I think the most important thing is to have someone who believes in you as well.
Yeah, that like is right. But above all, Assumpta, I love the determination of these people called the 77%, which is always what you're talking about, the drive and the motivation.
Wow, great.
Focus Europe.
Throughout his papacy, Pope Francis has warned of the presence of the devil. Last September, the pontiff even said the devil was working overtime to undermine the Catholic Church.
And it seems many Italians also believe in the devil's work. Every year, 500,000 Italians go to see an exorcist. Wow. The city of Rome has seven exorcists. Our reporter Angelo Van Schaik joined some of the faithful hoping for an audience with Rome's most famous exorcist, Padre Vincenzo.
It's 7 o'clock in the morning, not far from the Vatican, and a church called Santa Maria in Traspontina opens its doors. People have been waiting outside for hours to be among the first to meet Padre Vincenzo. Padre Vincenzo is 81-year-old Vincenzo Tarabelli. He's been the official exorcist of the Diocese of Rome for 29 years. Padre Vincenzo is the most famous of Rome's 7 exorcists. And he and his colleagues are inundated with work. These two women have been waiting for Padre Vincenzo all morning.
I came to Padre Vincenzo so he'll bless my religious medals. He's stronger and more spiritual than other priests. 15 years ago, I went to Padre Amorth, the Vatican's most famous exorcist back then. I had a dream telling me to do this. My grandmother had just died and I was looking for comfort, and I found it. Now, again, a dream has sent me to an exorcist. There are some problems in my family. My brother is very ill, so I'm looking for comfort again. If you're not feeling well and you're religious, you turn to God and you talk to God through a priest. But an exorcist is a more spiritual priest. So that's why I'm here.
When will you leave? You've made her suffer a lot already. Go away, Satan. I exorcise you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
That's Father Cataldo, one of Padre Vincenzo's colleagues in Palermo, Sicily. And that's the way really tough cases are treated. The devil is exorcised through what are called liberation prayers. Sessions can be repeated if necessary. But Father Vincenzo says most cases are less dramatic.
Most people come here because of daily problems, trouble with their children, fights with their parents. Most of the time, people just seek comfort. I've seen thousands of people over the years, but very few people who are really possessed. Maybe a couple of dozen. People who are not possessed, but certainly disturbed. I'm convinced the devil exists, and his greatest strength is making people believe he doesn't exist.
Personally, I do not believe the devil exists, but I do believe that economic hardship and social problems can increase someone's need to hold on to something. So perhaps those 500,000 Italians who visit an exorcist each year are simply looking for support in these tough times.
Wow, this is really interesting. That report was by Angelo Van Schaik. I think Italy or Rome needs some missionaries from Africa. What do you think, CP?
Oh, well, things have changed because actually years back in Africa, it was said to be bad and now it's happening. So Assumpta, that is a point of discussion. But the shocking thing is the number of Italians who are actually visiting these places for exorcism.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's something that was really shocking and I never thought of that. Anyway, on one of the stories that we covered today was about fake news in Nigeria. I mean, people who are combating fake news. And we have lots of comments here. One of my favorite is from Jimmy Maltins. He says, that's not fake news. Buhari is dead. And our social media desk is saying, well, last time we checked, he was still running for presidency.
But the most interesting is actually Ronald Boba, who says, fake news is when Mr. President raised the hand of a photographer and the media report and his own news outlet comes out to say it was fake news. They said it happened and then it was said to be fake news. Very interesting outlook there. I would also like to know how it is in other countries. How are you fighting fake news? Let us know on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Yes, and that's all we have time for today. My name is Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Thank you for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.